Srimad-Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 47.
Tatashtrishoye-Bhagavat-Prachodita-Sutam-Samadhyaya-Tasutita-Grihat Sadabhi-Gantu-Iyesha-Tarhaja-Yayogamaya-Jalinanda-Jayaya.
Translation. Thereafter, exactly when Vasudeva, being inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy, took birth as the daughter of the wife of Maharaj Nanda. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses that Krishna appeared simultaneously as the son of Devaki and as the son of Yashoda, along with the spiritual energy Yogamaya. As the son of Devaki, he first appeared as Vishnu, and because Vasudeva was not in a position of pure affection for Krishna, Vasudeva worshipped his son as Lord Vishnu. Yashoda, however, pleased her son Krishna without understanding his godhood. This is the difference between Krishna as the son of Yashoda and as the son of Devaki. This is explained by Vishwanatha Chakravarti on the authority of Harivamsa. Om Ajnanachananasya Gyananjanashamapaya Chokshamilitamina Tasmai Shri.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktivedanta. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
We want to understand the science of Krishna. How can you get pleasure at the deepest level and fulfillment and completion at the deepest level just by understanding something? This seems hard to comprehend, especially as we go deeper into Kali Yuga. It seems to us that for maximum fulfillment, our gross senses have to be involved. And perhaps the mind has to be involved. We want so-called tangible things that we can grapple with to attain fulfillment, completion, and satisfaction. So how is it that your life will be perfect and complete beyond any material anticipation or expectation? How is it that your life will be perfect and complete simply by understanding Krishna? So this is what you have to discuss with yourself. How much is it worth to you to understand Krishna? You all have tried to understand various persons from time to time. If it was important for your own program, if that person had potential for your gratification in some subtle or gross way, then you would try to understand that person. And if understanding something, some subject matter, was necessary for your economic development, then you would try to understand it. Or maybe it's just necessary to understand it for the sake of your survival. You would try to understand it. So what is the payoff, so to speak? We're always interested in payoffs. What is the payoff for trying to understand Krishna? That you have to convince yourself of. The payoff is so great that Prahlad Maharaj says, from the very beginning of your life, you should be trying to understand Krishna. Now, what else do you know that you should be trying to understand from the very beginning of your life that will have such an impact on you? Maybe your parents, as mine did, taught you how to read when you were 3 or 4. Maybe you learned how to count. 2 years old. Or maybe you learned how to play sports at a very young age. But have these things made your life perfect? Basically, no. They're survival skills. Skills for increasing your economic advantage and social respectability. Of course, these days, as predicted by Sridhar Goswami in 12th Canto, Bhagavatam, social respectability is based on money. The more money you have, the more an advanced personality you're considered to be. So what is it about the science of Krishna, Bhagavad Dharma, that you should learn from the very beginning of life? Prahlad Maharaj says, Komara Achrit Pragya Tarman Bhagavatanya Durabha Manasam Janma Charapya Durabha Bhantana. From the very beginning of life, or failing that, at least whatever age you are that you understand the necessity to understand Krishna, from that point, you should absorb yourself in understanding the science of the Supreme. And then Prahlad gives the corollary information. You should understand that the human form of life is very difficult to achieve. We need some background perspective on why this human body is so important. Otherwise, we'll easily throw away the great gift, the rare gift of the human form of life. So Prahlad said, Durlabha Manasam Janma. It's very difficult to get a human body. Think about that. I know you've heard it so often. But just see how we treat our human life so casually. I've got time. I've got my own ambitions. I've got my own desires. I've got my own ways. You don't bug me. I don't bug you. You do your thing, whatever it is, I do mine. Just look at yourself and see how casually you treat the possession of your human body. You just take it for granted that the material world owes you something. The material world owes me a good time, it owes me fulfillment, it owes me money. But if we take Prahlad Maharaj's statement very strongly, as we should, then we start to realize we have the rarest treasure. What are we going to do with it? We have the greatest investment opportunity. What does Prahlad Maharaj also point out? He notices, even though he's just a five-year-old boy. Of course, remember, he's been enlightened by Narada Muni while he was in the womb of his mother. His mother, while she was pregnant with Prahlad, she also heard from Narada Muni. But because she was in such anxiety about her material situation, she forgot everything that Narada Muni said. Whereas Prahlad was in the womb, even though he's in the most difficult material situation, life in the womb is very, very traumatic. But still, Prahlad remembered everything that Narada Muni said. This shows you that if you have a strong desire to be Krishna conscious, no material circumstance can impede you, can stop you. There may be a bumpy road, there may be challenges, but if you have that strong desire, and no matter what, I'm going to hear about Krishna, chant about Krishna, serve Krishna, somehow or other your show will go on. Somehow or other, your spiritual life will proceed. So Prahlad demonstrates that. Regardless of his material situation. Durabha Manasam Janma Tadapya Durabha Martadam. He points out that even though this human form of life is temporary, it has value, Marta. Generally, you would think temporary things, or you should think that temporary things actually don't have any real value. They're here today, gone tomorrow. But Prahlad says, no, this human form of life, even though it's temporary, it has value because with it, You can achieve the supreme destination. You can understand the science of Krishna. Well, we were speaking about investments. Prahlad points out, even though he's a 5-year-old boy, that he notices people in this world are very attentive to save the slightest amount of money. Yet, they squander the incalculable wealth of the human form of life. So attentive they are, how to conserve their money, how to protect their wealth, increase their wealth. So much energy goes into that. Whether it's just household finance or big investments, real estate, whatever, share market. We're so focused. But on the value of the human body, they don't know. So we need to ask ourselves, what is so special about understanding Krishna? Are we just a bunch of true believers who, you know, we happen to believe in Krishna, others have other beliefs, so that's the way it is. It's all arbitrary, it's all relative. Have some kind of belief that gets you through the day and night. So we've chosen the Krishna belief. Why? Well, the food's good. Why understand the science of Krishna? Why is it so important? That you have to ask yourself. Otherwise, we'll become very lazy in our approach to Krishna. If you've ever had a relationship with someone and that person becomes lazy in dealing with you, that means the person becomes inattentive, callous, insensitive, just not showing any motivation anymore to try to relate to you. Relationship becomes a real drag. It starts to become painful, and you start to wonder, you know, what are you all about? What are you in this relationship for? So similarly, we can become very stale and lackadaisical in our approach to understanding Krishna. Look, I believe in Krishna. Isn't that enough? I do the rituals. I do some puja. Isn't that enough? Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam presents that understanding Krishna is the be-all and end-all of life. Your whole life will be measured by whether you can successfully understand Krishna or not. So then you need to tell yourself, what is so special about Krishna? Understanding what is special about Krishna will motivate you to understand him more. Otherwise, bhakti becomes just another option in life, a nice, colorful religious belief. Sometimes mundane scholars speculate that the bhakti culture is very nice, but it will never spread in the Western world because it's too colorfully exotic. Funny ways of dressing, funny ways of talking, wearing paint on your forehead, all kinds of exotic rituals. Of course, such mundane scholars have been saying that for decades. Meanwhile, bhakti has spread all over the world. So, if we don't dedicate our life to understanding Krishna, we won't make any spiritual advancement. We'll remain on the Prakriti Bhakta, the third-class devotee, materialistic devotee platform, in which we're so dedicated to understanding the material energy, understanding material happiness and distress, but we lack anything except the most superficial knowledge of Krishna. Now, what does Krishna himself say in Bhagavad Gita? Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tattvata chakta devam kuna janma naiti maaveti sorjuna. Krishna gives you his guarantee. If you can understand his activities and his appearance in this world. If you can understand that scientifically, truthfully, then what? You become a nice believer? No, Krishna says. Then, upon giving up the present body, you don't take another material body. You go to him, you go to Krishna. But you won't be motivated to go to Krishna unless you understand Krishna. How Krishna's all attractive. What is his abode like? What are his associates like? We're meant to be captivated by this information. You may remember attempting or planning to travel somewhere that you've never been before. Thailand or Fiji or whatever. And you very excitedly study the destination and imagine in your mind, oh, what is it going to be like? And you develop this false sense of attraction in your mind for whatever place that you're spending so much money to travel to. Las Vegas or who knows, California, London. Many of you remember the excitement of your first OE, your overseas experience. Often, young New Zealanders tell me that they have to go overseas. They have to check it out. See how other people are living. They all say that's the reason, to see how other people are living. Of course, I explained to them, look, you're getting intoxicated, having illicit sex here. You'll just go overseas and do the same thing. No, it's not just, it's a bit about that, but not only that, but it's about studying other cultures, seeing how other people do things. So already in your mind, there's built up this artificial attractiveness. I'm going to go to another realm, another abode, and I'll see different things that'll be attractive. Of course, we know that. Wherever they go, they'll just see the same thing. Different styles of doing the same thing. What about Krishna's abode? Are we interested in understanding that? And Krishna gives you his guarantee. You understand me in truth. Now, sometimes it takes an effort to understand someone. Often, you hear people talking about relationships, because relationships in the age of Kali are very difficult. What is the nature of Kali Yuga? Dissension, disunity. Anything else is the exception. So you can see Kali Yuga at work all the time, even amongst devotees, to whatever extent that they're influenced by the material energy. You'll see Kali Yuga at work, creating disunity, disharmony, arguments. That's Kali Yuga. What experienced devotees try to do is minimize the damage caused by Kali Yuga by creating spiritual unity. But always that effect of Kali Yuga will be knocking at the door, causing commotion, causing persons to go off in different directions. So it's a great achievement for anyone to remain united in Kali Yuga. There's no unity that lasts on the platform of sense gratification. Basically, on the material platform, the only time you'll see some unity that lasts for more than a few years is if there's war. And that's enforced unity. As soon as the war is over, you see the reality break out. Everyone just does their own thing. That's the only temporary way of unity in the material world. There's no unity based on sense gratification. Impossible. Of course, war is also sense gratification, but because everyone feels they're under a threat, a common threat, they have to pull together temporarily. So that's as good as it gets in Kali Yuga in terms of unity. Have a war! The old maxim, or if there's trouble in your country, trouble at home means war abroad. Start a war abroad in order to bring the people at home together. Well, that is the basic principle of unity in Kali Yuga. It only happens through war. It doesn't happen through sense gratification. It doesn't happen through money. So here we are in the midst of such an ocean of disunity, trying to unite in understanding Krishna, trying to unite in serving Krishna. So it takes some effort. So we were pointing out how in ordinary relationships, you can see that people are struggling because it's Kali Yuga, and any kind of relationship unity will be torn apart so easily. So therefore you hear people saying, well, you've got to work at a relationship. Yes, it takes work because it's unnatural in Kali Yuga to be united in any kind of way. You got to put effort in. Got to understand the other person. What does that particular person want? Now just think, what about the effort to understand Krishna? Even if it doesn't seem natural to us in the beginning, why not try? Why not endeavor? I'm going to give quality time for understanding Krishna. So many persons today in relationships are begging, demanding, give me quality time. The phrase is even spread in India now. The spouses in India are now using that mantra, quality time. So, what about quality time for Krishna? Are we impersonalists who don't understand that we need to put effort to understand Krishna? And then just think of the reward. Krishna says, upon giving up the present body, you won't take another material body. You'll come to me. So, that guarantee is in two parts. Number one, you won't take another material body. So what are you going to say about that? So what? Bodies aren't so bad. Right? When you're young and healthy, you say like that. Bodies, what's the problem with having a body? In your 20s or 30s and you're still healthy. Material body, you know, life is kind of good. Problems sometimes, but you know, the body, you know, it's good for a few things, you know? Wait till your health crumbles. Wait till inevitably, whether it's today or tomorrow, wait till your body gives you so many health problems. And of course, wait till death. At least in those times, you understand the material body is an extraordinary problem. That same body that you're relying on to give you thrills and good feelings, that same body is so painful you just want to die. I don't know if you've known persons who have been very sick or leaving this world. I want to die now. I want to get rid of this body. It's too painful. So that's one part of Krishna's offer. You won't take another material body. The second part is, you'll come to him. Mameti. Then, that means we need to understand the supreme destination. The supreme tourist spot. Understand Vaikuntha. Understand the topmost Vaikuntha planet, Krishna Loka, Galoka Vrindavan. We should become inquisitive and curious about these things. So we develop some motivation to go there. Of course, it's also true. A real devotee, which we're all aspiring to be, simply wants to engage in Krishna's service in the association of sincere devotees. When you do that, you're already back home, back to God. What does Krishna tell Narada Muni? He says, I'm not actually in Vaikuntha. I'm actually not in the hearts of the yogis who meditate on me. I'm wherever my pure devotees are chanting my glories. That's where I am. Of course, Lord Chaitanya, as the topmost bhakta, demonstrated how wherever he was, that is Vrindavan. Because in his mind, the pastimes of Vrindavan were spontaneously taking place. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna showing the ultimate potential of bhakti. Isn't it practical that we consider what our next destination is in terms of what will my next body be and what will my next dimension be, my next abode? What will it be? At the loft in Auckland, we were discussing. What's your plan for your next body? You ever think what your next body is going to be? Or that you're going to get the next body? And most persons said, no, never thought about it. The pressures of the day are so overwhelming. Bills to pay, relationship problems, work problems, gratification issues. What am I going to do this weekend? Then your own body issues, the hormones are pressing you. Illnesses are pressing you. Your mind is so turbulent, spinning this way, spinning that way. And you're supposed to think about what your next body is going to be. The so-called civilization of today is so chaotic in terms of auspiciousness for spiritual development that you don't have the necessary material stability and peace for contemplating what is the ultimate goal of life. That is the great injustice being done to people today. They live in a society that agitates their mind so much and destroys any kind of stability, harmony, and peace that's necessary to make a solid foundation for spiritual development. Of course, because the situation is so inauspicious for spiritual advancement, because there's so many negative factors, Krishna comes as his name. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In the age of Kali, Krishna is certainly here, but as Nama Rupa, in the form of his holy name. That is the Krishna Avatar for the age of Kali. So we can counteract all the negative influences, all the disunifying influences of Kali Yuga by seriously chanting Hare Krishna. Of course, at the same time, devotees are very compassionate. A devotee knows that not everyone is going to chant Hare Krishna with the required intensity and dedication, so that just by chanting Hare Krishna, all your problems are solved. It is true, believe it or not, that just by chanting Hare Krishna, all your problems will be solved. But we don't chant with that required intensity and dedication. So out of compassion, the Vaishnavas think how to persuade human society to organize on the material platform properly so that people can settle down and become more stable so that they can focus more easily on their spiritual development. But also, at the same time, it is true that just by chanting Hare Krishna, no matter what the situation, you can conquer over all the problems of Kali Yuga. But as Srila Prabhupada himself, as he raised the point, not all of our devotees are chanting Hare Krishna with the required attention. And therefore they begin to wonder, I'm chanting for all these years, but how come all my problems aren't solved? Well, what is the main problem in life? You have to understand that first of all. The main problem in life is that we have a material body. That's basic Bhagavad Gita, but many of us have forgotten that or don't know it. The basic problem in life is you have a material body. Want to know what the problem is? Look in the mirror. If you see a material body, you've got problems. But do you really think like that? No, you look in the mirror and, looks kind of nice. How can I make it look nicer when I see it in the mirror? So once you understand what the real problem is, then you can start to see how chanting Hare Krishna solves all your problems. And remember, Krishna says, if you can understand him in truth, upon giving up the present body, you won't take another material body. You'll go to Krishna. Now, what about Krishna's abode? You can read in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita how when the devotee Gopa Kumara was approaching Goloka Vrindavan and he was approaching the Mathura district, he noticed this resembles the Vrindavan on the earth planet. In fact, he looked around and said, of course, the time Sanatana Goswami wrote Brihad Bhagavatamrita a few hundred years ago, Gopa Kumara said, this looks like North India. The area around Vrindavan. So he was wondering, how is this place different? And as he got further in his approach to Vrindavan itself, he was on the topmost planet in Vaikuntha. But he saw village life, he saw cowherd boys, cowherd men, cowherd ladies, cows, forests, rivers. He was wondering, how is this different? And then he noticed that all the persons he encountered seemed completely distracted. They seemed to have had their hearts stolen out of their core of their being. Their hearts had been stolen. And like they were always, their mentality was that we've lost something. Something is missing. So Gopa Kumara began to wonder. They must have come in contact with that great cheater, Krishna, who steals your heart and then disappears. As he got closer to Vrindavan, he realized that I can't tell whether this place is drowning in an ocean of happiness or an ocean of sorrow. Because to the untrained eye, to the eye not smeared with devotion, love of Krishna and separation can look like complete misery. For example, when British scholars during the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or just after, they were writing historical accounts. Yes, you will find Lord Chaitanya in their historical accounts, but it won't, of course, be, the historical accounts won't refer to Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of God. What they say is, there was this great social reformer in the 15th, 16th century of India, and he leveled all caste distinctions and gave everyone an equal opportunity to be a brahmana. He was doing great with his social movement. And then the last 20 years of his life, he just lost the plot completely. We don't know what happened to him. He just became mad. To the mundane vision, how can it understand love of Krishna and separation? And that's the highest gift that Lord Chaitanya is giving. Yes, to the mundane eye, even lower stages of bhakti look crazy. To the mundane eye, it looks at devotees, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. Where do you get your happiness from? Just see, It's 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning and you're sitting on the floor listening to a talk. What did you do last night? Did you at least stay at home if you're unfortunate, you couldn't go out anywhere? Did you at least stay at home and look at your what is it now, 50-inch TV screen? Did you at least do that? So the life of a devotee looks unappealing to a gross materialist. Where's the happiness? Where's the joy? And you're always worried about, am I hearing the Hare Krishna mantra? You're always worried about, am I pleasing my spiritual master in Krishna? Come on, get over it. Just be yourself. Just take care of yourself. And of course, sometimes even our own devotees succumb to this illusion. Yeah, why am I bugging myself so much about trying to be Krishna conscious? Well, maybe I should just live life, get on with my life, you know, and just be free of all that artificial pressure that's been induced in me.
You've got to become Krishna conscious, Guru. Are you satisfying Krishna? Is your Guru pleased with you?
You just throw away that burden and just do what you like. In a nice way, of course. Why can't you just be nice to your neighbors, be kind to human beings and animals, and then leave it at that? Why this pressure in bhakti? But that pressure in bhakti is the pressure of love. And gradually, as you become more purified, you start to realize something known as Krishna Trishna, the thirst to satisfy Krishna. And that is what Vrindavan is all about. The Krishna Trishna, Prema Trishna, the thirst caused by love of Krishna, the thirst caused by Prema. So that's what Gopakumar was seeing as he approached Vrindavan. He's seeing a place devastated by Krishna Trishna, devastated by the thirst to satisfy Krishna. And that thirst, that Krishna Trishna, looks like misery to the untrained eye. So therefore, Gopakumar was saying, is this the ocean of bliss or is this the ocean of suffering? He encountered people who were crying. He encountered persons who were looking devastated as he got closer to Nandishwar, the town of Nanda Maharaj. And gradually you understand what all the apparent devastation is about. Because Gopakumar is approaching Nanda Maharaj's town during the day. And what happens during the day? Krishna's gone to the forest. So the whole town is devastated. People are crying. Now, from the mundane point of view, what's the big deal? He's going to be back in the evening. But that's the nature of the topmost portion of the spiritual world. Every day it's like that. And Gopakumar noticed all the movements of nature are there. There's a sun shining that goes up and down. There's vegetation. Of course, everything is completely conscious. There's no matter. But still, there's a sun. There's a moon. There's all the features of nature. Yet, what happens every day? Every day, eternally, there's this drama. Krishna's gone to the forest. Oh, no. Every day, eternally, there's never an end to it. One old coward lady tells Gopakumar, yes, he's gone to the forest. If he doesn't come back at the expected time, we're all going to die. Every day, eternally, it's like that. Now, this is inconceivable to you. Can you imagine a daily drama, even for 1 year? Oh, no. You're gone. You won't be back until evening. And have you ever told anyone that? Your most dearly beloved? Your whatever? If you don't come back at the expected time, I'm going to die today. Of course not. And you cannot conceive of every day going through this drama eternally.
Krishna's gone to the forest. Oh, no. What happens when Krishna goes to the forest? Gopakumar finds out. Mother Yashoda is following behind him. She's supposed to stay at home. She's got things to do in her house. Everything in her house is meant for Krishna's pleasure, just like everything in all of Vrindavan is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Yet she follows after him. Krishna, please, take this fruit, take these sweets. He takes them, and she goes back. And again, he's trying to get to the forest. Mother Yashoda keeps running after Krishna. One more thing, Krishna. Again and again, repeatedly, she does this. And she starts instructing the cowherd boys around Krishna. Now, make sure he doesn't go to the deepest part of the forest, Sri Dama. Make sure that. Subala, make sure he doesn't go into the forest where the thorns are. Another cowherd boy. She tells him, make sure he takes his lunch on time. Okay, she gives that message, then she fades back as if she's going back home. No, she comes forward again. One more thing, Krishna. She puts some pan in his mouth. This goes on and on and on, repeatedly. More times than you can describe. She can't let Krishna go to the forest. She has to keep catching up with him as he's on the forest path. Krishna, Krishna. Please come home on time. Finally, what does Krishna do? This goes on repeatedly. You think you've seen a mother's love? You've never seen a drop of what the ocean of Mother Yashoda's love is for Krishna. She keeps coming back, catching up to him as he's trying to go down the path into the forest. One more thing, Krishna, remember this, remember that. Taste this, eat that. Finally, Krishna turns around and he starts shaking his head at her and moving his eyebrows, indicating enough, enough, enough. You have things to do at home. Every day this drama goes on. And the young gopi girls, practically indescribable. They're following Krishna too. And they're doing it in public. They don't do that. They want to keep everything secret. Their meetings with Krishna at the nighttime and their overwhelming, all-consuming attraction for Krishna, they want to keep that secret. But when Krishna leaves in the morning for the forest, it's such a traumatic event that they start following behind him. Tears are streaming out of their eyes. Every day, eternally. This is Vrindavan. It's just one big nonstop drama. What kind of town is this? That's what Gopakumar, he was noting as he approached Vrindavan. What kind of place is this? Are they in misery or are they in total ecstasy? Everyone looks devastated. They're crying. Because he came during the day when Krishna's in the forest. Every day it's like that. Krishna leaves for the forest every morning. Comes back in the evening. When he comes back in the evening, there's another kind of drama. Eternal. So how will you understand that with material intelligence? To material intelligence, Vrindavan looks like an emotional disaster area. Talk about emotional baggage. Vrindavan is the land of unlimited emotional baggage, everyone's carrying. But that emotional baggage is completely pure. The highest ecstasy of emotional baggage, devoid of the slightest trace of the material energy. So that's all that goes on in Vrindavan. That's what Gopakumar notices, besides all the natural opulence of a cowherd village. He notices there's the sun, there's the moon, there's trees, there's rivers, there's cows, there's people, there's older people, there's younger people. The most prominent thing he notices is everyone is just carrying such emotional baggage. There's such a drama going on nonstop, eternally, as if it never happened before. Every morning, like it never happened before. Oh, Krishna's going to the forest. Like it never happened before. And every evening, Krishna comes back from the forest, as if it never happened before. Everyone's out to greet him. The whole village is waiting outside the village as Krishna comes up the path, like it never happened before. First, they hear a slight sound of a flute mixed with the mooing of cows coming from far away. They know Krishna's on his way back. What have they been doing? What have the Brijvasis been doing during the day? Looking at the sky. Oh, the sun is still high in the sky. It's not evening time yet. Oh, we can't tolerate the separation. Now, how many of you have done that? Day after day after day, eternally, for anyone that you cherish so much. Oh, look at the sun. When is it going to move? We can't take it anymore. Just a second of separation from Krishna is intolerable. So they look and see the sun is still high in the sky. And they're always looking at the paths leading to the forest. Do I see any dust far away on those paths, indicating that the herd of cows and Krishna's coming back? No. What is that I hear? Was that a flute sound far off in the distance? This is how they spend the day. Sometimes Mother Yasoda sends Nanda Maharaj up to the tap, to the watchtower on top of their house. What do you see? Do you see Krishna coming yet? This is how every day is spent. The more you understand Krishna's world, the more you realize that that is where your fulfillment is. That is where your completion is. Of course, if we can serve Krishna sincerely in the association of sincere devotees, we're already back to Godhead. And as we advance in bhakti, we start to realize that. This is why Gadadhar Pandit told Lord Chaitanya that actually you don't need to go to Vrindavan. Wherever you are, that's Vrindavan. And so many of Lord Chaitanya's associates never went to Vrindavan. You don't read a Haridas Thakur going to Vrindavan. So many of his associates never went to Vrindavan because wherever they were, that is Vrindavan. But still, Lord Chaitanya, to set the example for the ordinary person, he tried to go to Vrindavan. Although he is, in his mind, Vrindavan was always there. Spontaneously, the Vrindavan pastimes were in his consciousness. So this is the double reality of bhakti. There is a place known as Loka Vrindavan. And at the same time, if you're serving Krishna and hearing about Krishna in suitable association of devotees, you're already back to God. That's something to realize. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.